James Bond confidently bunkered the Lille Tycoon on his left, won, made up the cagnotte with a few small counters, and doubled the staked 2,000 new francs, 200,000 of the old. He won that, and the next. Now for the hurdle of the third coup, and he was off to the races. He won it with a natural 9. 800,000 in the bank, as Bond reckoned it. Again he won, with difficulty this time, his 6 against a 5. Then he decided to play it safe and pile up some capital. Of the 1,000,006, he asked for the 600 to be put en garage, removed from the stake, leaving a bank of 1,000,000. Again he won. Now he put 1,000,000 en garage. Once more a bank of 1,000,000, and now he would have a fat cushion of 1,000,006 coming to him anyway. But it was getting difficult to make up his stake. The table was becoming wary of this dark Englishman who played so quietly, wary of the half-smile of certitude on his rather cruel mouth. Who was he? Where did he come from? What did he do? There was a murmur of excited speculation round the table. So far a run of 6. Would the Englishman pocket his small fortune and pass the bank, or would he continue to run it? Surely the cards must change. But James Bond's mind was made up. The cards have no memory in defeat. They also have no memory in victory. He ran the bank 3 more times, adding each time 1,000,000 to his garage, and then the little old English lady who had so far left the running to the others stepped in and bankoed him at the 10th turn, and Bond smiled across at her, knowing that she was going to win. And she did, ignominiously, with a 1 against Bond's bouche, 3 kings making 0. There was a sigh of relief round the table. The spell had been broken, and a whisper of envy as the heavy mother-of-pearl plaques piled nearly a foot high, 4,600,000 francs worth, well over £3,000, were shunted across to Bond with the flat of the croupier's spatula. Bond tossed a plaque for 1,000 new francs to the croupier, received the traditional "Merci, monsieur, pour le personnel," and the game went on. James Bond lit a cigarette and paid little attention as the shoe went shunting round the table away from him. He had made a packet, damn it. A bloody packet. Now he must be careful. Sit on it. But not too careful. Not sit on all of it. This was a glorious evening. It was barely past midnight. He didn't want to go home yet. So be it. He would run his bank when it came to him, but do no bankoing of the others, absolutely none. The cards had got hot. His run had shown that. There would be other runs now, and he could easily burn his fingers chasing them. Bond was right. When the shoe got to number 5, to one of the Lille tycoons 2 places to the left of Bond, an ill-mannered, loud-mouthed player who smoked a cigar out of an amber and gold holder and who tore at the cards with heavily manicured, spatulate fingers and slapped them down like a German tarot player, he quickly got through the third coup and was off. Bond, in accordance with his plan, left him severely alone, and now, at the 6th coup, the bank stood at 20,000 new francs, 2,000,000 of the old, and the table had got wary again. Everyone was sitting on his money. The croupier and the chef de jeu made their loud calls. "Un banco de 20,000, faites vos jeux, monsieur, il reste à compléter, un banco de 20,000." And then there she was. She had come from nowhere, and was standing beside the croupier, and Bond had no time to take in more than golden arms, a beautiful golden face with brilliant blue eyes and shocking pink lips, some kind of a plain white dress, a bell of golden hair down to her shoulders, and then it came. "Banco." Everyone looked at her, and there was a moment's silence. And then, "Le banco est fait," from the croupier,